This episode is sponsored in part by Swim. Okay, here's a depressing stat. 70% of shoppers who want your products never actually buy them. They browse, they consider, then they forget. That's revenue walking out the door. Swim Wishlist Plus turns browsers into buyers. Customers save products they want, get notified when prices drop or items restock. You can also engage them in personalized fashion through your marketing or sales outreach. It's like having a personal shopper reminding them to come back and buy from you instead of your competitors. And 45,000 stores already use it, and it only takes 5 minutes to install. You could try it free today for 14 days. Go to getswim.com/Kurt. That's swimwithay.com/Kurt. Turn those maybe laters into sales today. Getswim.com. Today on the show, we're going to talk how to build a brand before you quite have a business. I love this idea because it reduces risk for the entrepreneur. It's, you know, what if you could raise millions before you are ready to ship the product? Of course, I'm talking about pre-orders and crowdfunding and all that stuff that sounds great on paper, but in practice, okay, it's hard. It's still hard. It's all hard. But we've got a guy who's done this before quite successfully, and he's going to share his story with us. Bryant Garvin has done it. At Purple, his ads turned a mattress company into a household name. Like, certainly you've heard of Purple Mattress. At Groove Life, his video playbook helped them scale their ads. And now at Oslo Sleep, it seems he's doing it again. And so, Bryant, welcome to the show. Did I get that all right?
Yeah, you got that all right. Excited to be here, man. Something I'm passionate about.
Excellent. And so we're talking how to build a brand before you have a business. So you start this journey with Purple Mattress?
Yeah, I started this particular journey with Purple Mattress, but I've been doing this 20 years, helping brands. Started way back in the day at Lycos. If any of you are old enough to remember the search engine Lycos. As Lycos was dying, Google was rising. I was an account executive there. So I was a Google Ads rep, only I was really, really useful. And so that's where I got my start and then moved into brand. And I love it. I love growing brands.
So at Purple, what was that breakthrough success you had you had like a viral success is the dream. It's what everybody wants. It's easier said than done. What was yours?
So at Purple, I'll be completely honest. The amazing thing that we did there, first off, it started with the right product. I don't care how good your videos are. I don't care how good your marketing is. Like, the product has to also be good because that's the foundation you're building everything off of. And if you've got a truly unique, differentiated product, then all of your marketing can build on top of that, right? And so having the product first, and this was a product that the founders had been working on for over 20 plus years, essentially, until they came up with the Purple Mattress. They literally invented the machines that were big enough to make the mattress, that gel material in that size, which was a thing that they had made proprietary. That gel that was inside the Purple Mattress was the same formulation in some ways, differentiated so it could be in a mattress, that they had originally licensed to Dr. Scholl's, the blue gel insoles. And so they were 60, 70-year-old guys that had been inventing for years and finally invented a machine that they could actually take that purple material and make it in the size of a California King, a king size mattress. So just the machine that made it had tons of patents, right? So that product was key as a starting place. But then one of the things that they did really early on is they were willing to invest in the creative, which is another one of those pillars, the content, to be able to actually grow a brand. And so they invested in that pillar of content by actually going out and hiring the Harmon brothers to help create that first Goldilocks video.
In marketing, that's like gives people goosebumps. Why, for people who aren't familiar, what is so exciting about the Harmon brothers?
The Harmon brothers are the original ones that helped do Squatty Potty, Poopery, some of these viral brands that everybody knows about, right?
I think like Dr. Unicorn. Squatch.
Yeah, very similar to Dr. Squatch. Dr. Squatch was not done by the Harmon brothers, but very similar in those aspects. So Poopery and Squatty Potty were the two big ones that they had grown up at that point in time. They're also, those guys eventually went and started VidAngel, which is, you know, a big production company at this point in time. So they're really good at taking product and telling the stories around it and making it quote unquote viral. But here's the thing that I want to make a point of. Most brand virality is paid for. So most brand virality, when you think of viral videos, very, very rarely is it truly a viral video that just organically happens, especially in this day and age. Like TikTok and Meta, sometimes you can get some virality there, right? Like it picks up the algorithm and stuff like that. To get a viral video on YouTube these days is next to impossible. And most brand videos, videos that are for a brand or a product, the only way they quote unquote go viral is because they're able to put money behind it. Even look at Super Bowl commercials that have millions and millions of views. And oh my gosh, it's so viral and so funny. First off, they spent millions to produce it. They spent millions to run the ad. And then there's millions behind the PR and that Super Bowl thing in order to get millions of views on YouTube, right? So every video that you see out there from a brand, 99.9% of them, if they have millions of views on them, it's because they put money behind it. And as startups, especially bootstrap startups like Purple and Groove Life, the only way to continue to put millions of dollars behind a video is if it's making you millions of dollars.
So this is where our pre-order campaigns come in?
That is one of the reasons why pre-order campaigns come in, because it helps fund and validate what you're doing, right? So the original Purple pre-order campaign videos didn't look anything like the Harmon Brothers ones. They were shot really, really cheaply, low cost, just to get the product out there. There was humor, there was all of those things there, but they used the pre-order opportunity to validate, to get cash to actually produce the product, and then to take it to market. We did the same thing at Groove Life. We did the same thing at Oslo, where we took those pre-orders to first validate the product market fit, actually get some revenue coming in the door, which the goal of that revenue isn't just to make a ton of money. It's to help with the production process and to get feedback, right? Because that's one of the things that a lot of people, when they think of pre-orders, they just think, oh, get a bunch of money to pay for the product, to get it shipped here type of thing. But really what a lot of it is also getting feedback, that feedback mechanism. When you think about Kickstarter, when you think about Indiegogo, even if you did pre-orders on Shopify, a lot of those people, they're willing to take a risk to get your product, not 100% sure that they're going to get it, but the cost savings and the ability to be one of the first to actually have a product that they love and be in the front, right? I was one of the first Purple mattress companies. I was one of the first group, right? It builds this tribe. And that tribe gives you feedback. And if you take that feedback, you can scale your business along with it.
Part of the reason they're jumping in early as these early adopters is because of the discount. And typically, you know, pre-orders a crowdfunding campaign, there's a discount on it. What's the typical discount from, you know, what will eventually be retail?
It really depends on the product. And part of that depends on the margins on the product, right? Like if you've only got a 40% margin on your product, you can't be giving 50% discounts. But it also depends on how long before the product's going to be available, the discount that you're going to be able to give. So every single brand is going to be significantly more than they will normally ever give on their website. And one of the reasons why is you want to give these customers an opportunity to say, hey, thank you for joining us. Here's a discount that we will never see again, right? Like if you look at all of the discounts that we did at Purple, at Groove Life, at Oslo, we never had given those discount percentages at any place in time ever again. And part of that was to reward the people that are willing to raise their hand, put money on their credit card, their bank account, whatever it is, and say, hey, I'm willing to join you for this ride. I know that there's some risk here. I know there might be some hiccups, some other things like that, but the story you're telling me, the product you're delivering to me sounds really unique and different. And I would like to be one of the first to do that. And so you reward with them with that discount.
That Purple campaign, how long ago was that?
So that was in the end of 2015 is when the Kickstarter campaign happened, the original one for the mattress. And then
how much did it do?
I did like $100,000. So okay. It wasn't like this knockaway success, but they were able to sell a couple hundred mattresses, validate it, get some feedback, that type of thing. And then they took all of that and put it into the Harmon Brothers campaign, which launched in January of 2016. So to put that in perspective, they launched the video campaign and the company in January of 2016. At that point in time, very few people knew about Purple. By the end of 2017, we had as much brand search volume for Purple mattress as there was for memory foam mattress, less than 2 years after launch. When you think about memory, like a non-brand keyword, that's something that lots of people think about. It's not a brand. It's a category keyword. It's a type of thing, a memory foam mattress. It's a Bluetooth headphone versus an AirPod. Purple mattress versus memory foam mattress or latex mattress or bed in a box mattress, whatever it is, right? So to have as much brand search volume as one of the main non-brand keywords tells you a little something.
Yeah, well, you dominate the category.
Exactly. And it was built off of performance because the only way we could continue to invest money was if we actually made money.
All right. Hindsight being 2020, if you had to go, you know, it's 10 years ago. If you were to go back and do it differently, what would you do differently?
Differently, I would definitely invest a little bit more if it was available into the Kickstarter campaign because I've seen the success of those campaigns over and over again.
Did you only run the one Kickstarter campaign or were there multiple?
No, that's the beautiful thing. We started on Kickstarter with mattress. Then they developed the Purple Pillow. The Purple Pillow, we actually went back to Kickstarter and we went back that next like August, September timeframe. So it was kind of around a year after we had launched the original Kickstarter campaign for the mattress. We had already launched the publicly. We're delivering mattresses. We're selling hundreds of mattresses a day at that point in time. And we took the Purple Pillow and we developed a Kickstarter for that. But at that point in time, we had already reverse engineered what the Harman Brothers formula was. And all of our campaigns that we did internally at that point in time were all built in-house. We had a video creative team in-house. We worked through the process and able to launch those things. So we did a Harman Brothers style campaign for our Kickstarter launch for the Purple Pillow. The Purple Pillow at the point in time that we launched it did almost $2.7 million.
That's a lot of pillows.
That is a lot of pillows, okay? Here's the other really cool thing. At the time that we did it, it was the 42nd most funded Kickstarter campaign of all time. At that point in time, it had beat out the Oculus Rift as far as sales, okay? So all of those
people had like a high AOV too.
It had a high AOV, like the Purple Pillow was a $100 pillow at that point in time. One of the cool things that we did with every other company that I've been with, we not only pushed the Purple Pillow, but at the same time, while we were pushing the Purple Pillow, we also built out packages on the campaign page for a Purple Pillow plus a Purple mattress so that we were using the Purple Pillow to build awareness of the mattress at the same exact time. And so we saw a lot of adoption. There are people that bought the Purple mattress there because they got a discount on that bundle. And because we introduced people there, they're getting the Purple Pillow. They were getting that. We were able to get press from all of this, right? And then we funneled all of those people into Shopify. We actually took all those orders that we got, exported them, and imported them into Shopify. So we actually shipped directly from Shopify. And all of those orders that came through Shopify, we then already had set up for reviews. So when we launched the actual Purple Pillow direct to consumer, we had hundreds and thousands of reviews on that pillow.
That's the magic. I mean, it's very different to land on a site that's got, you know, an expensive product that you're going to be married to a while, like a mattress you own many years.
Exactly.
I think I'm on 10 years with mine. And if you show up on that site and there's zero reviews, it's not going to be a good look. You're really going to struggle. And so this system to get reviews is smart. And that Purple site was on Shopify then.
Yep, it was Shopify. It kind of built semi-headless. When we did it, we were actually one of the very first brands to actually custom build a headless. Shopify, especially back in the day, was product pages. That's it. It wasn't really built for landing pages, wasn't built for any of these things.
Pre-online store 2.0.
And even back then, landing page builders weren't truly a Shopify thing in 2016.
Yeah, back then, what'd you do? Like, you have to run, you know, like a separate thing on a subdomain. We ran
WordPress on a subdomain. Yeah.
Oh, you poor man.
And then clicked them through to the cart page, essentially, to purchase. So, like, the friction there was ridiculous when we think about that, right? As we started off. But because the product was so unique and differentiated, just showing up $999 when they hit the page for a mattress that's not going to do it with a couple product images and some text, right? We had to sell them. We had to actually go to a landing page to sell them on why they should look at Purple versus everything else that was out there. And remember, this was the heyday of bed-in-a-box mattresses.
Oh, yeah. It was like a big deal then.
Time for a quick break from our friends at Zipify who help make this show possible. Because if tariffs are eating your margins, guess what? You are not alone. Smart merchants aren't raising prices, though. They're offsetting costs by boosting average order value. And the easiest way to do that? Zipify's one-click upsell. It uses AI to recommend the best upsells and cross-sells in real time based on what your customers are buying and what's worked in your store. There's no manual setups, no split testing, just automatic, personalized offers that convert. OCU can increase your average order value by up to 30% from day one, and it works everywhere. Product page, cart, checkout, post-purchase, even in the shop app. Over 50,000 Shopify stores use it. Nearly $1 billion in extra revenue has been generated. So start your 30-day free trial at zipify.com/Kurt. That's zipify.com/KURT. Because in this economy, the best defense, it's a higher AOV.
So after Purple, you went to Groove Life. Groove Life, who sells like silicone rings, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me about scaling Groove Life. Like, you know, what was that business like when you joined?
What's really cool about it is I actually spoke in Ezra Firestone Blue Ribbon Mastermind back in 2018.
Oh, love Ezra. And I enjoyed Blue Ribbon.
So I spoke at this mastermind. And at that point in time, like, I'm the type of guy that I will tell you everything. Because here's the thing. 99.9% of people will not even go attempt what you tell them.
Yep.
And so I laid it all out for everybody there at the Blue Ribbon Mastermind. And I started with consulting at that point in time with them and helped starting them grow on that side with the video, with their advertising, with all of those things, right? But they did all of that in-house. They did it really scrappy. They were bootstrapped. They weren't venture-backed. So they took it really scrappy. They decided to take, based off of my pocket Blue Ribbon, and go all in on YouTube and test it out and play with it.
That Blue Ribbon talk, was essentially you laying out, like, this is the Purple video formula. This is the Harman, you know, format, we think.
Yeah, this is the Purple video formula, and this is why video is so impactful. I laid out the product information, right? Product is king. Then I laid out the content, how you do it. I showed literally us testing different things and how we showed up with specific intros, because the hook, the intro, whatever you want to call it, is the most important thing. If you can't grab their attention in that first half a second, 1 second, 2 seconds on Facebook, Meta, whatever you want to call it, they're not stopping as they're scrolling, right? On YouTube, they're going to hit the skip button. So how do you grab their attention? And then how do you take that attention and actually turn it into education and selling? And that's the big thing. And so I showed all of that information and went, and they decided to do it.
My notes say that you scaled this from 3 million to 40 million. Is this true?
Yeah, plus.
That's wild.
And we did multiple Kickstarters. So Peter had actually done a Kickstarter before I knew him to launch the Groove Ring. And then we took that and we launched Next Watch Bands. We did silicone watch bands with grooves and stuff like that. Then we launched a wallet. Right. So like did multiple things along the way here. We launched the belt and then the wallet. And so all of those we launched on Kickstarter. Even though we were already an established brand, we went back to Kickstarter. Again, part of the reason was to get all the funds to just manufacture and produce and get things, right? Like if you can have it paid for before you ever have to ship something, why not? When it's a new product, see how much people like it. Test your marketing out. Get to test your creative. Get to test your hooks, get to test those different things. Test, even though you can only have one landing page for Kickstarter as an example, or Indiegogo, you can test if you move things around, how you order the page, how conversion rates fall, right? And you can test all of those things before you ever drop it into your direct consumer site. Yes, you may not have all of the pixel data that was there, but you could see the sales coming in, right? You also give an opportunity for those that, if you launched on Kickstarter at one point in time, go back to those people that already launched and be like, hey, this is the new thing we're coming out with. Do you guys want to be first? So you can leverage your email list, your texts, all of those things to push people to that Kickstarter. Then it builds the virality there because there's comments, there's likes, there's shares, there's all of those things happening on the ads as well as on the Kickstarter itself. And it just continues to grow.
So what did your Kickstarter at Groove Life do?
So the watch did about $300,000 in sales. Okay. The
watch or watch strap?
Watch strap. Watch band.
Okay, wow.
Just a watch band.
That's a lot of units.
Yeah. It's a lot of units. And then we launched the belt, the Groove Belt. The Groove Belt did almost $1 million. And remember, this is at the time when everybody's doing all like the mission belts and all of those other types of belts at that point in time. But yeah. It was unique. That was the thing. There was something unique about each of those products that was different than what was in market. And if you can point to what the benefits are, how it's different, that's the core of your content.
So going from, but scaling from 3 to 40 million, it's over 10x. It is huge growth. And so expanding the product catalog, I imagine, is a big part of that. The success of these two Kickstarters, for sure. Is there, one thing you could point to as like, this is the thing that changed the game?
I'm thinking back to Groove in particular. One of the things that Groove did really uniquely was they actually were able to do all of the designs and stuff in-house in their warehouse in Tennessee. So they could launch a new design, actually test it out, see how it sold. And if it like sold well, they could just produce a bunch more right there because they had all of the base material there. And then they had developed a proprietary process to actually print, engrave, do all of those things in-house. So again, it goes back to product differentiation and ability and rapidity to scale things. When we were scaling at that point in time, 50% of our sales were female.
Were they buying for themselves or men?
They were buying for themselves and their husbands, right? So like one of our best promos with the belts as an example was buy a belt, get a free ring, right? Because we weren't really discounting the belt when we launched. So buy a belt, get a free ring.
Gift with purchase, my favorite promo.
They would buy a belt for their husband, spouse, whatever, and then get a free ring for themselves. And because the rings were not just functional, they were also fashionable. There were literally people that had stacks of rings, 20, 30, 40, 50, tens of rings, because they would buy the fashion and then they would enjoy the function. And a lot of times that fashion first, they didn't care about the breathability as much or this or that. And it wasn't like they were all CrossFitters or this or that or the other thing. They were like, oh, sounds comfortable. I really like that ring. Oh, and it's fairly inexpensive. It compared to other rings that they could buy in the market. And if they bought one because they're buying a belt for their spouse or significant other, even better, they got a free one. And then it introduced them to the product. And there was introduction, like being able to, in some way, be fast fashion and introduce new product that way allowed us to scale things. One of my favorite things that we did was COVID came and hit, right? The year before, they ended right when I came in. Cash flow business, right? Bootstrapped. We started the year with only a certain amount of runway. By the end of the year, we 10x'd how much cash was in the bank. But one of the things that we did that year while we were trying to figure things out and like pushing for stuff is Peter went out and was like, hey, if we could get more licenses, because we had launched NFL, we had launched Mossy Oak and some of these camo type of brands. If we could get other licenses, what would you do? And I just like, Marvel. Marvel would be pretty cool. Right. And this is 2019. Okay. So he literally just went out and started calling Disney stores to try and see if he could get with somebody at Marvel. Connected with somebody at Marvel. We launched that product in November of 2020. That product itself in November of 2020 did over $1 million in sales, the Marvel product line. Now, that was not core hunting, fishing, camping, CrossFitting audience. It allowed us to reach into a new audience at a more premium product price point.
Clearly like the video is your baby, the thing you love. Are there creative angles that just consistently perform?
So the one thing that I will say is really impactful. First off, humor is always a good thing. I don't care what type of the world is going through. First off, humor is a universal language. Okay. Secondly, even if the world is going through hell in a handbasket, right, is going to hell in a handbasket, if you can actually get somebody to smile or laugh, you've made their day better. And they're going to remember that feeling. And everything we do is based off of feeling first, logic second, as humans. So if you can get somebody to feel good about your brand, slash products slash whatever, because you made them smile, even like did a little chuckle or whatever, right? All you've already won half of the way there, if not 80% of the way there. The second thing, start with a question. And here's why. Subconsciously, we are wired to see questions, changes, other things like that, subconsciously to answer that question. If I ask you a question, hey, what's the weather like where you're at? You're immediately start thinking about it before you even wanted to.
I even knowing the setup, I tried to resist. And the moment you said the question, 90 degrees Fahrenheit popped into my head. I was like, damn it.
And that's the thing, is the subconscious mind, we are built because we were wired to scan for danger, difference, whatever, right? And so the moment a question is asked, our subconscious is trying to answer that question because the answer may determine whether we're safe or not. And so asking questions like with the groove life, the question that he started the YouTube videos with, that we kickstarted all of the growth there, was, have you seen this ring? And you hold up one of the groove like rings. And it made you immediately think, I don't know, have I? What ring is that?
And there's a person, right? It's like a person, you're seeing someone's face. And I mean, it really short circuits a lot of your defenses.
100%. Like, oh, yeah, well. Clever. Yeah, and face to camera is really important, because then you're talking to the person. Like, we see big brands that do a lot of like camera over here, camera over there, and it's like kind of documentary style stuff. But when you're talking to somebody, we immediately are hardwired to pay attention.
Yeah, they try to go like full, you know, Netflix documentary cinematography, when that's not what we're, you know, they're making it harder than it needs to be, is what I'm hearing.
100% harder. You don't even have to do a big Harman Brothers production. That video was produced in-house. If you go back and look at that Groove Life video, you're like, wow, that production wasn't that great. But that is what kickstarted everything. And if you look at that video, there's millions of views on that video. Why? Because it helped increase sales.
Absolutely. And now, especially, you know, post-pandemic and with, you know, younger people being digital natives, the expectations around video quality have completely changed. Just entirely. What we're looking for is authenticity. What we absolutely accept that, like, yeah, maybe this was probably just shot on a phone with a ring light, you know, that no one thinks twice about that. It's totally fine now. And so, but for a brand founder, it is scary and intimidating to be face to camera in a video. And so you're like, well, I can't do it unless I add all this other stuff, you know, and pretty soon you've got like a $2,000 DSLR and a studio light, and you're hiring, oh man, then you really go crazy. You hire the Harman Brothers, right? When in reality, you know, you didn't need any of that. You needed great product and a hook, you know, face to camera. Okay, this is starting to sound more accessible.
Exactly. What's your story? Why should people care about your product? Why should they care about your product versus somebody else's? Why does your product actually solve the problem, whatever that problem is, perceived or real? Because that's the thing, is you can create problems in people's subconscious, right?
Agitate, like, the pain.
Exactly. So how does your product solve the problem that you help them recognize? Because you want to dig in on the pain there and compare to other solutions in market. That's basically the formula. And if you can do it in a really entertaining way where they don't realize they watched a 4-minute video, even better.
That's the trick. I think that's the hard part. Well, first is, you know, knowing your positioning, especially early on. Fundamentally, you're making it up. You're like, you're basing it on your own experience, and that's fine. And then over time, you know, maybe you get this successful Kickstarter. Now you've got your feedback loop. You're getting that customer feedback. We can get reviews on the site. We can revise. But now we have a much better understanding of our positioning, right? Because we know who is buying, why they're buying, ideally. And that makes life a lot easier. And now if we, you know, the hard part is trying to be funny. Oh man, some people just aren't funny.
Honestly, that's okay too. Like, to be honest, the most important thing is to tap into emotion. Humor is one of the best ways. Like, YouTube has done study after study after study, and that humor emotion is the thing that hooks people the most. But suspense, stress, like any of these other emotions can get people to engage. What you are just trying to do is tap into that core primal bodily function of emotion to take an action, even if that action is just to watch your video. Because if you can get them to take an action to watch your video, then you can sell them, then they can learn more, then they can logically go through the process on their own, go look at reviews, go look at this, go look at that, and decide to purchase. But by the time somebody's decided to go look and review and compare, they've already decided they want your product. And that was an emotional decision.
Interesting. Yeah, the purchase decision happened before I start doing the research. Man, those order change emails suck. They're always like, I ordered the wrong size. I meant to change the shipping address. Oops, I was drunk. Instead of making customers email you that stuff, let them fix it themselves with Cleverific. Cleverific is a self-service portal that lets customers edit their orders without bugging you. That means you get fewer headaches, customers get faster fulfillment, and there's fewer returns overall. Everybody wins. Peter Manning, New York, cut their support tickets by 99% with Cleverific. You want in on that? Get 50% off the pro plan, just $49 a month, exclusively for listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50. Done. Problem solved. That's Cleverific.
I love when the conversation turns to like core human psychology, because it really, like, fundamentally, so that's what marketing is. Right, is appealing to an irrational creature that knows language. But, you know, oftentimes if you go back and read like older marketing books, you know, go back decades, you discover the concepts don't change. You know, copywriting really does not change much over time. And so a lot of the stuff you could take and apply, and it's because it's like, you're right, you're just appealing to our reptilian lizard brain. So after Groove Life, you moved on. You're working on Oslo Sleep Buds. The heck is a sleep bud?
So glad you asked. Look at that question. Now everybody in the audience is going to be asking the same question. Even if they didn't want to know what it was, they're now thinking, yeah, what is an Oslo Sleep Bud? So sleep buds are little tiny Bluetooth earbuds specifically designed for sleep. What's cool about it is these are so small that you can tint them, put them in your ear, and they can sit flush.
Jeez, that's a lot of blood, though.
What? Why is that a lot
of blood? I'm messing with you.
I'm like, what?
No, I'm just messing with you. I'm messing with you for people who are listening to the audio-only version.
Well, no pain, no gain is what I always say. Just kidding.
The man did not bleed from his ears, just to be clear.
These were originally invented by Bose. Bose is an amazing audio technology company. So they invented these sleep buds.
And they spun it off or gave it its own brand name?
So what happened is they were going through some restructuring and they decided to spin off, kill whatever, their health business and focus in on their core headphone and speaker business. And so when that was happening, there were passionate people about this product that existed. And so N.B. Patil, who is one of the co-founders of Oslo, decided to see if he could get the rights to the sleep buds. So he got the patent rights to it. And then they actually developed, when it first launched, it was literally just white noise in your ear, controlled through an app. And the whole point is to block out the noise in your environment. They added Bluetooth streaming and sensing in the case so that they could actually stream anything you want, detect when you fall asleep, and then transition to white noise special sounds that we've developed to help you stay asleep and not get interrupted, say by a train going by in the city, a snoring partner, other stuff like that. So it's a functional device that actually helps you do something better, which keeps you asleep.
Yeah, you know, all of these things, though, you know, solve pain or problem.
Exactly.
Hey, I want to sleep better. That's quality of life, which is a great, you know, great appeal. And Groove Life, all right, a little squishier, but if I recall correctly, you know, a lot of silicone rings positioned metal rings as a liability, right? Like you get your finger degloved or you get electrocuted. Like you could really injure yourself with a ring if it's metal. Yeah, everything always goes back to pain or problem, doesn't it?
Yeah, even I don't know if anybody's lifted. Like I've got an Aura ring on this hand, and for those watching the video, lifting with an Aura ring is not that comfortable, to be honest, because it's a metal ring, essentially.
It's hard.
Lifting with a silicone ring is really easy because it's comfortable. You don't have to worry about taking it off. It doesn't get pinch your finger when you move the wrong way, any of those types of things. And so, yes, it's solving pain, again, real or perceived, in a way that is unique to your product. That is what really good products do, is they solve a problem in people's lives. This just happens to solve a problem of literally blocking out the noise in your bed or in your head, right? Like allowing you to block out the noise that keeps you awake, wakes you up during the night, or block the noise in your head by allowing you to stream whatever you want to calm your mind, get the racing thoughts to go away, get you to sleep, and then keep you there. First off, AirPods don't have the battery life that you need for a whole night of sleep. Secondly, they're not comfortable, right? So these little things have 10 hours of battery life on that little tiny device. And in order to do that, they had to engineer systems that had never been invented in order to make it that small and make it that comfortable.
And oslosleep.com, of course, this is on Shopify. And I notice some great social proof here. 2,349 reviews. But something I've not noticed before, after the review stars, it says over 104,000 sold. I like that. I've just never seen a site do it. I'm like, oh, wow, that's kind of powerful.
Yeah, it's just another validation point. Because again, as people, we don't want to experience new without some assurity. So knowing that over 100,000 people have already bought or purchased and are potentially using, it's another validation point.
I took a screenshot of it. That's how much I like it.
And one of the fun things that I've done there, just so everybody knows, is like I know how many we're selling a day, that type of thing. And so it's a script that we put in on the back end with the dev that we had a starting place. And if you come back to the site a couple hours from now, that number will have increased some.
Oh yeah, I just hit refresh and it went up one. That's very clever. This got to get rebranded, reinvented, and sold again. Did you do another crowdfunding campaign for it? Because the first one was Indiegogo it was Bose on Indiegogo.
We started on Kickstarter, and then we transitioned to Indiegogo.
Okay.
So on Kickstarter, and this was a little bit contentious in the industry because there was already some credibility from Bose, right? But this truly is a unique product. Like out of the number of components in here, 95% of them are completely different than what the Bose ones had. So it is essentially a brand new product. And I knew that along the way, manufacturing can always go sideways. What you think the product will do can be different. Like it's a hardware product. We weren't 100% confident. Yes, we can ship by this day. Yes, it will be 100%. And so we're going to test it out. Let's actually run ads. Let's actually see things. Let's see what kind of potential we can get. Let's test our messaging, test our marketing, do all of that stuff, and build some credibility along the way. So our Kickstarter campaign did over $1.4 million. But I had to experience moving from Kickstarter to Indiegogo when I was at Groove Life. And one of the things that helped is allows us to continue taking pre-orders until we were essentially ready to sell on our website. And so it wasn't just revenue stopped. We were able to keep the money coming in through Indiegogo in demand. And so we did that at Oslo. And one of the reasons we did, we thought it was only going to be for a month, maybe 2 months, but then product issues happened and they had to re-engineer a bunch of things. So we went from delivering in November potentially to our first product was shipped very end of February, March of 2024, when it was supposed to have been the end of 2023.
With crowdfunding, you know, you're pre-selling all this product, and then at some point, like the more you sell, you've got this great liability that keeps building. But you also, you know, ideally you have the cash to answer it. And so have you ever had, you know, a product flop, a campaign miss, or, you know, you got to go back and, you know, you have customer support nightmares potentially. Like maybe that's what happened with Oslo here.
We definitely had some customer support issues along the way. One of the things that I will say that I've learned in particular with Oslo is be very transparent. People, we position this as new. We position this as special. We position this as something different, right? We position it as a new company. So if you're going to have hiccups and mistakes along the way, just be more transparent with people. Like explain what's going on. It was the silence or the vacuum that fills more issues than conversation. And remember, these people wanted to be along for the journey. They raised their hand. So it wasn't like, oh, well, never mind. Yes, we had to give some refunds along the way. Yes, we've given some sense. But like, the point was, if we had actually been communicating with people and engaging with them and building that community more than what we did, it would have gone even better. And that's one of the things that people need to learn. Like, consumers are really forgiving. You're honest and transparent with them. And that goes back to the authenticity. Instead of, oh, well, we can't say anything because we aren't really sure. Say that. Say, hey, we ran into some hiccups. The chips that we used in this have never been used by anybody before because we wanted to be forward thinking so that we don't have to go back and re-engineer this 6 months from now. But in doing that, there are some hiccups with this. And we're having to re-engineer this and this and this. Like, being transparent is going to win every single time versus, and some people might get pissed off and leave. That's okay. But not saying anything is going to have more people fill the vacuum, because silence is the one thing that gets people to fill in. If you have silence,
they'll make up the answer.
Yeah. Notice what you did. You started talking.
I filled it in.
You filled it in.
Like, I'm launching a new product. When is crowdfunding the right path? Like, who's a good candidate?
So when you've got it probably prototyped 80% of the way there, and you have some manufacturing potentially lined up, like, that is one of the things, especially in today's age, because there have been so many crowdfunding that has completely taken lots of money and never delivered. Like, think of the Coolest Cooler, right, as an example. Never exists. Yeah. Tens of millions of dollars delivered nothing, right? Think of the Pebble Watch. Think of all these things that don't truly deliver after crowdfunding, because that's one of the risks, is going through Kickstarter.
You know, I did eventually get the Pebble Watch.
The Pebble Watch did eventually show up. But what I'm saying is, like, there's all of these things that happen and they don't always have to deliver, because when you actually are in Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and this is one of the reasons to go through one of those platforms, they are technically not buying your product. They are actually saying, hey, I want to donate and invest in you guys funding this. As a reward, I'm hoping to get this product. Okay, so there's a very big liability difference there. And these Kickstarter and Indiegogo are specifically set up to limit liability for the companies. But with that, because there have been so many issues, you basically have to have a physical prototype now in order to actually start a Kickstarter or Indiegogo campaign.
Which, it makes sense. You know, I'm glad they do it that way. Yeah, I don't know that if you've never done it before, people may not realize, for Kickstarter or Indiegogo, you apply and they have to approve your listing before it ever goes live, before anyone sees it. All right, so with all of these campaigns, you get to pick one KPI. What KPI do you track?
Blended ROAS.
Okay. Blended ROAS.
MER, whatever you want to call it.
MERS.
Basically, yeah. What are my dollars out? What are my dollars in?
That is the heartbeat. That is our lifeline.
One thing that I do here is, everybody calls it ad spend. I actually call it ad investment. So I have, when I belay on my Google Sheets in the beginning, it's investment divided by revenue. If you look at advertising as an investment instead of a spend, it changes how you look at things.
I think that's smart. Like, spend says this money's gone. Investment says, hey, we're by advertising, we're investing back in the business. But also, you know, implicit in there is risk. All investment carries inherent risk.
Yeah.
But yeah, 100%. I like that.
And if you're investing and you're not getting the returns you want, you change your investment strategy.
Also true. Money seeks alpha. What worst piece of marketing advice you keep hearing?
Trust the numbers in the dashboards.
Oh. We're skeptical of our attribution.
Attribution is a four-letter word to me, in that everything should be directional. If you look back at the great marketers of all time, if you look at the Mad Men, all of these things, even the people today, the attribution, I'm using that in air quotes, in the dashboards, in the tools, everything else should be used directionally. I don't care if it's saying I got a 5 ROAS, if at the end of the day, I'm losing money on the business. Like, that's why I go back to the core. What are the true dollars out versus the dollars in? Not what the platform says.
Any favorite underutilized marketing channel?
YouTube. I think it's still the most underutilized. YouTube, I believe, is the most valuable impression on the web. And the reason why is because YouTube is, first off, there is no other channel in the world that you can literally target consumers that searched for something in the last 30 days. You can build out custom intent audiences on Google and then serve them video ads.
That is powerful, isn't it?
That's really powerful. And one of the things that's really powerful about that, that doesn't mean they came to your website. So you're not reliant on pixels. You're reliant within the ecosystem that exists there. Plus, when you serve a YouTube ad, maybe CPV, whatever you're doing, essentially, you don't pay if they skip the ad, but you have 5 seconds to make a brand impression for free.
Oh, okay. So if they, you know, they see the ad, they let it run for 3 seconds, they skip it. I don't pay for it, but I still, you know, they still saw it. Like Twitter is like, oh, you saw it for a tenth of a second impression.
Same with Meta, same with everywhere.
Yeah. And okay, where can people go to follow your work or learn more about you?
I'm on X, LinkedIn. Honestly, if you just Google Bryant Garvin, you can find me pretty easily. So,
okay. We'll include those. And, final thought for, the folks in the trenches.
I think the biggest thing, and I know lots of people talk about this, but remember that, and maybe most people don't think about it, but the numbers on your computer screen, in your dashboards, in your Excel sheets, in your analytics platforms, whatever, every single one of those numbers actually equates to a human being on the other side of that device. And then on the other side of that impression, that click, that website visit. And so don't lose sight of the fact that you're actually talking, interacting with, educating, communicating, building relationships with humans. The moment you forget that, you lose the core of what marketing truly is and what you're doing.
I love the amount of humanity that was included in your answers for this whole interview. That's great. Bryant Garvin, Oslo Sleep, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.